What Popper is showing us is that the concept of the modern state has no role for us, for we the people. Or I should say, no self-determined role. It does have a role in the sense of sucking on us for energy like the Matrix showed us. That the concept of the modern state is founded in fear of the people. For here we see the man, Hegel, who in some sense presented the totalitarian reworking of the nation as a sycophantic gift to the so-called masters. The man who was tasked with the mission to strip away any hint of freedom from the concept of nationalism and the modern state. We see his teachings still busy state legitimating today. This is still what's taught to the future statesman. And as we read the following excerpt, I ask that we ask ourselves, are we still stuck there in the master's fear? Or are we ready to discuss it and move on? And this is a quote from Emmanuel Wallerstein's The Modern World System 4, Centrist Liberalism Triumphant, 1789 to 1914. And this is the same period that Martin Bernal is looking at when he talks about the creation of the mythology of ancient Greece and installing that mythology in the institutions of education, so-called higher education, of the ruling class, of rulers, so-called. Now, do you think that's a coincidence? I don't, that it's the same period. Quote, construction of the modern state, located within and constrained by an interstate system, had been a constituent element of the modern world system from its beginnings in the long 16th century. And he says long there because he's referring to the turbulence of events that happens within that period, and that it's sort of, you know, washes over into the preceding and the subsequent century. The concern of rulers, continuing with Emmanuel Wallerstein, the concern of rulers had been to strengthen the state in two ways. To strengthen its authority, that is, its capacity to make efficacious decisions within its frontiers, and to strengthen its world power, that is, its capacity to impose its will on other states and diminish their possibility of doing the converse. There had long been much debate about the proper distribution of decision-making within the state, how much of it should be concentrated in the head of state as sovereign, how much shared with legislative bodies. For three centuries, however, the debate remained one of distribution of power among branches of government. It is true that in 1776, the U.S. Declaration of Independence was proclaimed in the name of We the People, but it was not at all clear, even to the signers of this declaration, how seriously one was to take the idea of popular sovereignty and what its implications were. For the world system as a whole, it was the French Revolution that let the genie out of the bottle. After 1789, it was impossible to keep political debate within a privileged circle of propertied interest. And he's quoting Evans there. Continuing, the French Revolution and its Napoleonic aftermath made the concept of popular sovereignty one with which every government in the modern world had to come to terms, and none more so than the governments of the two rivals for hegemonic power, England and France. The question in 1815 was whether 1789 to 1815 was merely a sort of revolutionary interlude to be interred by a restoration and a Tory reaction. And he's referring to the two, you know, French versus English ways of putting it, or whether the concept of popular sovereignty would have an enduring political impact. to the surprise of the restorers of global order. It was an idea that had taken deeper root than they had realized. The distinction between the liberal state and democracy was, in Max Beloff's words, the most important distinction in 19th century politics. Democracy in 19th century usage meant taking popular sovereignty seriously. The notables were not and have never been ready to do this. It was the realization of this new reality that would give birth to that extraordinary invention of the 19th century, the political ideology. And my interjection, innovation? Really? He's forgetting Plato's Uncle Critias. That pauper hipped us too, who gave due credit to whoever invented the mythology of the gods. So we've had political ideology to justify rule for some time now. Continuing, in 1789, no one really knew what transferring sovereignty from the monarch to the people really meant. They thought it had something to do with limiting the arbitrary power of the executive authority associated with the concept of an absolute monarch. And so it did. But that done, there was still the need to find a legitimation for the decisions of passing coalitions of sundry political leaders. Taking seriously the slogan of popular sovereignty has seemed ever since to all those with effective political power to be threatening, to suggest the unpleasant prospect of submission to the vagaries of uninformed, capricious masses. The problem for the notables, therefore, was how to construct a structure that would seem to be popular, and in fact was not, but would nonetheless retain the support of a significant proportion of the quote-unquote people. That would not be easy. The liberal state was to be the historic solution. Unquote from Emanuel Wallerstein, The Modern World System 4, Centrist Liberalism Triumphant, 1789 to 1914, and that came out in 2011.